afternoon, everyone. My guest today is Pamela Weibel. Pamela, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Thanks for having me.
Hey, you're so welcome. Thanks for sending me a bunch of glitter in the mail you sent me.
Sure.
It made my day.
Oh, good.
It was so fun. And it just made so much sense with everything I've read on your site and when I talked with you on the phone. Like, of course she would send me a bunch of glitter and sparklies. It was great. So thanks so much for joining us. I'm just fascinated by the freshness. I guess fresh is the right word for what I want to say, the freshness of what I heard and read when I talked with you and when I read your interview. And I would just love for you to start by giving us a little background. Well, you know what? I want to read, before we do that, I want to read the little piece that was in The Sun. And that will give everyone just a little tiny taste, and then I'll let you take it from there. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, that's great.
It's a quote from you. So it says, "An unlikely pair of physicians brought me into the world. I spent my childhood playing in the hospital halls, peeking in on autopsies, talking to corpses, and examining the human remains stockpiled all over our house. My dad always introduced me as a doctor in training and set me loose on inmates, heroin addicts, and cadavers, while most girls my age were playing with Barbie dolls. My path as a healer began early, even before I was born." So I'll let you take it from there. Tell me a little bit about your path as a physician. I know that there was an important break at some point. So just tell me whatever you want to share about what you do and where you've been. Can you do that?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Yeah, I just consider myself very fortunate because I was born into a family with both my parents are physicians, and because I didn't have any child care, you know, I was often just taken to work with them. And so it was a wonderful experience, and I think that was maybe more common for a lot of kids in the distant past. They would, you know, almost apprentice with their parents from a young age. And now, of course, you know, it's not considered acceptable to bring your children to work at the police station or wherever you work. And so the time period was wonderful. You know, we weren't a culture that was so steeped in fear, I guess.
And where was it? Where in the country?
It was actually in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yeah, and so
And both of them were physicians.
Yeah, both of them are physicians. My mom's a psychiatrist and my dad's a pathologist. They're both still living, and my dad just retired at 86 after 50 years or more, I think 55 years. And
55 years.
Mm-hmm.
Howie.
Yeah, which I hope to do. I hope to be practicing till I'm in my 80s or 90s.
You have to, or you get to.
I would love to. I mean, unlike pilots who have to retire at age 60, the wonderful thing about being a physician is as long as our brain is functioning, we can work. So, yeah. And so I was just able to see a lot of things that most children, I guess, are sheltered from seeing. That, like, maybe the dark side, you know?
Yeah.
People with drug addiction, you know, heroin addicts being in a jail cell, not with the inmate, but on the other side of the bars, talking to inmates at a young age and talking to, you know, schizophrenic patients at mental hospitals and just, you know, looking at corpses, touching them, you know, in the morgue.
Wow. How old were you? How old?
From as young as I can remember, really. I mean, I was definitely in elementary school.
Wow,
six, seven, eight years old. That is pretty unique.
So no fear. So you lost. You didn't have the fear, the separation, I guess.
Yeah, I think
it was
a lot of people. Yeah, because the thing is, you know, when you think back, especially if you have a good childhood or you have wonderful moments with your parents, you know, a lot of people think back to like Christmas or opening presents under the tree or whatever. But for me, it was just going to work with my dad at the morgue. And because I did it with my dad and it was a fun thing to be with my father, and my father loved his work, so it just rubbed off on me. Like, I consider it just a privilege to be with people when they're dying and to be around death and even to help, you know, people who are drug addicted, all of this, because my father had such a good attitude and made it so much fun for me as a child.
That gives me chills. Talk about a legacy that runs layers and layers and layers deep. I mean, you know, that has made you a physician, but even if you'd never become a physician, that would have made you a really, really different person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What a gift. Oh, my goodness. So then, did you know that that's what you wanted to do? Was there ever a question?
Yeah, I always knew I wanted to help people because it was just so much fun. I was intrigued by people, of course, because I saw human beings at all different stages of development and, you know, from decomposition to jail cells and everywhere else. And, you know, I grew up in sort of a middle class Jewish suburban neighborhood. So, of course, you know, I saw one side of life being there, and then I saw the part of life that a lot of people in the United States don't choose to see or don't
yes.
want to see, and definitely don't want their children exposed to, right? People go through all sorts of trouble to stay in gated communities so they don't have to see some of the stuff that my father showed me, you know, at the tenderest of age and
yes.
made it fun, you know, because he was just a human being with them. He was very warm and compassionate and loving with them, so I guess I just learned to be that way with everyone. I might have naturally had that sort of spirit, but to see it, it's very good to see people in action, you know, mentors.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
having
yeah,
had
yeah.
my father as like this beautiful mentor for me from such a young age, it's an incredible experience.
Yes, it's, you know, it's in a way it's the apprenticeship. Like in Europe, there's still a lot of apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily study in books, but you can be somebody's apprentice for years and years.
Mm-hmm. And that's how medicine was always practiced. It's like an apprenticeship profession. Back in the 1850s, medical school was only 18 months long, so most of it was really just done in by working alongside other experienced physicians, most
yeah.
of the training. So I was very lucky because I got to start from day one.
Yeah,
really.
You had a long apprenticeship. Okay,
mm-hmm.
so you knew that's what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. And another thing I'll add, when I was really young, just the books that both of my parents read me as bedtime stories were medical textbooks.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would look at, and my dad's, because he's a pathologist, he had like really gruesome pictures of dismembered bodies. And so I enjoyed actually looking at those pictures as a young child as bedtime stories. If you can
he would
believe
put
that.
You to bed and read you that kind of books
mm-hmm.
with dismembered
yeah.
people.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, and my mom too would read, like, I mean, because the thing is, I think a lot of kids, when they're really young, pre-verbal, they just enjoy hearing their parents' voice. The content
yeah.
doesn't exactly matter. I mean, you can pick up on the mood of your parent, of course, from the inflection of the voice, you know, whether they're in a good or bad mood, but if they're just reading you, it doesn't matter what they're reading, actually. So, and they had to study anyway because they were early in their careers, so my
yeah,
mother
yeah,
was
yeah,
studying.
Yeah.
So she, of course, was just reading these books anyway, so just read them out loud to me.
And did that make any difference with your friends in school? Like what you had to talk about was so different than what they had to talk about?
It didn't really make any difference, except that I never was really into like playing with Barbie dolls or just a lot
well,
of people
course,
like...
Yeah.
They pretend, they're pretending to be adults by playing little games with Barbie dolls or something, but because I got to live an adult life as a child and I got
right.
to see things for real, I never really needed to go into this pretend world as
right,
much. Although I have a great imagination, I just felt like I was living it.
Yes,
I didn't have to reenact
yeah.
it with dolls, I guess. I don't know.
So then after high school, you knew you were going to be a physician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to, for a short time, I wanted to become a veterinarian, but then I really felt that I could not put animals to sleep. That would just
oh,
be too rough
okay.
for me. So I thought, you know, I really need to, I love dealing with people, and I'm intrigued by just human psychology, you know?
Yeah,
and
me too. What makes us tick? What makes us click?
Mm-hmm,
what,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
is, it's never-ending discovery.
It is. It's amazing.
I love it. And you
yeah.
know, I notice that the more that I do my work, the more I notice that there are some common themes. And
mm-hmm.
and I love that. And the more I notice that we're unique at the same time, and I love that. And the
yeah.
combination of both, this deepening knowledge of both is just kind of, it's titillating. I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so you went to medical school.
Yeah.
And
And
then
it
what?
was, well, medical school was a bit rough because, unlike being with my parents, who are pretty laid back and compassionate, you know, especially spending a lot of time with my dad, it was very hard in medical school because they made it sort of, they used intimidation tactics to try to control us. And
Give me an example.
well, I wanted to stand up for my right to choose not to do the dog labs. You know, we were supposed to murder animals as part of our training.
Murder them?
And yeah, actually, medical schools until very recently trained students in some sort of simplistic surgical techniques by using live animals. You know, and it's
Really?
just, yeah, very disturbing to me. Because I, in order to graduate from medical school, and I graduated in '93, I was supposed to murder 4 dogs and do really cruel experiments on sheep that we would reuse, you know? So it was just, I found it very disturbing because I was already vegetarian for ethical reasons,
Yeah.
and I wanted to become a healer, you know, to help humanity, and I just didn't understand how murdering innocent creatures would help me become a healer. You know, it just made no sense to me.
Yes.
And so I started a petition. Well, actually, I was going to drop out of school over this because I didn't see any way not to take this physiology lab. So I actually signed the papers to drop out of medical school because there's just no way I was going to murder.
How
I
long
already
into
had,
it with that? How
I
much?
was half a year into my, it was halfway into my first year.
Okay.
But because I didn't have any money to move and my parents wouldn't loan me any money to get a U-Haul truck, and I really had no idea what I would do because I always wanted to be a doctor, so I really didn't have like a plan B. But financially, I was not in a place to leave medical school, and my term had already been paid for, that my anatomy partner sort of just encouraged me to stay and keep taking tests. And I suddenly just got the courage to stand up and start a petition. So I asked, you know, out of 278 students in my class, I asked them, you know, does anyone else have a problem with doing these labs? And I had 3 other people sign the petition with me to, you know, choose not to do these labs, and I was going to
And
take it
apparently,
in.
that's a theme that's going to reoccur as you tell us your story. I know about the whole activist side of you. Now, is that something that your parents showed you, or is that something that's just you?
Oh, actually, my mother was an activist. She was a women's rights activist. She spent a lot of my childhood at like marches, bra burning marches, and women's rights. And she one time went into a businessman section of a restaurant and brought the media with her and made them allow women in because they used to have businessmen sections in restaurants where women couldn't go. You had to be a businessman. Can you believe that?
Oh, no, what year was that?
1970s, early
Oh,
70s.
kidding? Oh, no, I
Isn't
have.
that
Well, I was
wild?
in France then, so that doesn't sound
Okay.
like it would work. But okay, so you that piece was also shown to you, as you don't have to be scared. You can stand up and make a fuss and try to get what you want. Okay, good. I wanted to know that.
Yeah, so I did this petition, and then it turned out the other 3 students, I don't think they ever followed through with getting out of the labs because, you know, I did have to butt heads with the dean of the medical school. I did start another petition for, I thought, okay, well, only a few people signed the one to get out of the labs. Maybe I'll start a petition to support my right to choose. You know, at least if other people wanted to participate in the labs, they could support my right, you know, my ethical
So,
right
you
to
saw a
not to do the
door
labs.
close and you just looked for another window. So it definitely is strong in you. You didn't stop at one nose, two nose. You just kept looking for an angle.
And the thing is, these other students, this is what the amazing thing I learned, is that nobody else signed that second petition. Nobody would sign it because everyone is in so much fear that they will be blacklisted from residencies or be discriminated against. Nobody wants to stand out. And that's the thing that really was shocking to me because I'm always somebody who stands up for what I believe, and I don't care if I'm the only one in the room, the only one in the city to do it. I guess I don't have any fear. I'm really,
Yes.
I guess, in the fearless category. And
Well,
because
you've
I
been
was, you know,
raised in a very gentle
yeah.
environment that really celebrated you.
And celebrated like things that are necessarily scary to other people,
Yes.
you know, like death. Like
Yes.
that's a lot of people are scared of death, but I have no fear of death. It looks interesting. It looks like a wild adventure to me. And so, anyway, I just didn't have fear, and so I was amazed at how much fear other people had, you know, and how people are willing to basically give up their identity to become a doctor, you know, for example. That's why we have a very homogeneous crowd of doctors, because they had to give up their identity, or at least that's what they felt. And so then I sent this letter to the physiology director saying that, you know, by the way, I'm not going to participate in these labs, and here are my petitions. And he basically told me, I still have his return letter, it's amazing. He said, well, these are not experiments, and they're not optional. These are experiences that are mandatory. So the thing is, we weren't going to discover anything by doing these exercises that would help humanity. They were experiences, like we needed to get the blood on our hands of murder and death, be able to take an innocent creature and kill it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
that is
I
an
do.
Experience that I don't think we need to force upon our future healers, doctors, you know, because if anything, we should be giving them courses on how to improve their empathy, improve empathy and compassion, not take it away from people who are already intimidated to stand up for who they are. So, I
so what happened with that? You got
Then I was sent to the dean's office, and the dean sat
so
with
the
me.
Stakes are getting higher.
Yeah. So then I'm 21 years old or whatever, sitting in the dean's office with this 50-some-year-old guy, who's looking at me, and this is in Texas too, where everyone hunts on the weekends, and animals are, you know, they murder animals for fun. So for somebody to sit there and say, I'm not going to do the dog lab, you know, they've never heard of anyone doing this. And so he looked at me after I explained my case, and he basically diagnosed me with Bambi syndrome, which I had never heard of in my life, but essentially
Bambi
he was
syndrome?
Making Bambi syndrome. I guess it's what people who hunt and think it's okay to murder animals
You've
for fun and sport.
Kidding.
No, that's what he told me I had, a condition. I was diagnosed with Bambi syndrome. Isn't that weird?
Do you have it in writing?
I don't have it in writing, but boy, it still resonates in my mind. Yeah, and the thing is, so he exempted me from the labs. I didn't have to do it.
So but, he gave
you know,
you a
because I had a medical condition. I had to
You had a medical condition.
Yeah, right.
So he was able to put you into his world in order to get you what you wanted by giving you a medical condition.
Basically, yeah. 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 So, yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, my gosh. That's
and they offered me no other options. So it's not like they put me into another class or made me study alternate material. They basically, I didn't have to do anything. I was just free to actually sit there and watch everyone else go into the room with all the dogs wagging their tails. That they, you know, I watched my classmates from a distance do this.
Okay.
But I didn't have to participate. It was very brutal. I mean, medical school is very brutal.
But you got the blessing of the gift, though, of early on in your career having the victory of having done it your way.
Yeah, and I've had victory after victory, and it always happens after I stand up for something I believe in, and then people come and tell me that they're actually proud of me for standing up.
Of course.
So I've never had any bad outcome. Let me put it that way, because I have been pretty bold to the point of maybe losing jobs and such, but I never have any negative repercussions after standing up.
Yeah,
for
it's like the first person on the dance floor, you know.
Mhm.
Okay.
So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, of course. So you graduated, and you started your own practice.
Yeah, I went to residency, you know, did 3 years of family practice residency, and then I had a number of jobs in which I was an employee, and that's what really was too much for me to bear, because I was essentially on an assembly line, which most doctors in this country practice, on, you know, this very fast-paced sort of productivity model, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, a couple of rooms going at the same time.
Yeah, 3-4 rooms with naked people waiting at the same time. And I just felt like, wow, this is not at all what I had imagined that I would be doing after going
because
through the
parents
training.
Were not doing that at all.
No, and back then it wasn't really, people weren't doing that in the 70s. You know, it was a really beautiful time, you know.
Well, they still don't do that in France, you know.
Yeah, and other countries, of course, they're a little bit more progressed than we are.
Oh, yeah. My nephew just got a doctor come to his, I mean, that was a couple of years ago, but he had a doctor come to his mom's home in the middle of the night because he had an earache.
Yeah,
Dr.
and I do
Ishima.
house calls, and I love it. I love being a real person, which
Okay,
is
but
what
hold
people
on.
want
Let's go back to how you got to be a
chronologically.
real person. So, assembly line, disappointment.
Yeah, and then to make a long story short, I kept going from job to job because I kept thinking, oh, maybe it's just this place. So I would take another job, and every year to year and a half, I would change jobs, looking for a more humane environment in which I could be accepted for who I was, and I could spend more time with the patients and just be fully expressive, because healing, in my mind, is a full physical, emotional, spiritual process. I'm not just there to change your muffler, and do something
Right.
very superficial. And so, but that's what they were trying to have me do, a one size fits all, follow the algorithm cookbook, treating everyone with the same drug for the same problem, and
Yeah.
getting them through fast. And so I finally just got so depressed because I'm a gregarious person. I like to be around other people. I never really wanted to be self-employed because I'm not somebody that likes to be in isolation,
Okay.
But I got so
And what were your
depressed.
parents saying at the time?
Oh, they had warned me not to go into medicine, actually. They said,
Oh,
you don't want to do
really?
this because this, the, they're, you know, med they just forewarned me that medicine was going downhill, that, we were going to lose our autonomy, and that it was going to become very, full of red tape and bureaucracy. And, they definitely, I had my fair warning, but I decided, this is really my soul's purpose. I feel like I was born to be a healer. And so there was really no way to talk me out of doing this because I had to honor my life,
Yes.
and this is why I'm here. So one way or the other, I was going to figure out how to be a doctor, even in an unsustainable work situation. So
So then what?
I became very depressed. Actually, after my first job, I do have to say I started my own practice for a little while in my garage in a carport, which we
Really?
converted to a clinic. I treated all uninsured people. I was so frustrated after my first job because it was very by the numbers, bottom line, how many patients do you see a day? And it sort of pissed me off. And I just wanted to see people, the uninsured. I wanted to take care of, I guess, marginalized populations. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I'll just open a clinic in my house and charge everyone cash, and they can pay whatever they want, and they can do barter and trade. And I did that for a year. It was really fun.
But you had student loans, didn't you? How did that
No, I
work?
actually, because I went to medical school in Texas, I went to a pretty inexpensive school, and I
Ah,
paid
okay.
off my loans pretty quickly. Unfortunately, today, most medical students leave with like an average of $140,000 of loans. I only had $22,000, so it wasn't so
Yeah.
bad, and I could pay it off relatively quickly. So I was sort of financially able to, work
Yes.
making, whatever, $30,000 a year, whatever I was doing in my garage at home. And it was really cute. It was adorable. I gave people discounts for riding their bike to the office or walking, and
Really?
people traded, carrot juice and homemade, baked bread and all sorts of different things. And it was sort of adorable,
And so you and you felt that you were doing what you wanted to be doing.
Yeah, I did that for a year, but then I got sort of frustrated because I felt like, how is this? Because I'm really more of an activist at heart. I thought,
But
how is
within a
this
year, you
helping?
were able to build a full practice. That's pretty good,
Yeah,
though.
oh yeah, oh yeah. Oh, because there's a need. People are looking for real doctors,
Did you
real
advertise?
caring doctors. Just a little bit. They did an article in the paper, and it was, yeah, I was full. I was doing great.
Where was that
I mean,
paper?
not like necessarily great financially, according to most physicians, but great. I was feeling pretty good about it. Where was this?
Okay, okay.
It was in Eugene, Oregon,
All
where
right.
I've been all along. But the thing that frustrated me at the end, I thought, how is this helping the rest of the country? I mean, it's all fine and dandy that I'm sitting in my garage doing what I think is really fun, and I'm helping these few hundred patients of mine, but I really want to have more of a far-reaching effect than
Yes,
just sitting in
activity
my
too.
own little neighborhood doing my cute little thing.
Yes.
And then I also started to get lonely because I missed being around my colleagues. You know, I missed being around other doctors because
Yeah.
other doctors are suffering so much, they don't see a way out of their misery, you know, which part of it, a lot of it started in medical school. Like I said, they've been dehumanized systematically, and then, you know, their work environment is completely unhealthy, physically and spiritually speaking, for sure. And physically, you know, they're fatigued. 78% of doctors are fatigued and overworked. I mean, if you even look at these studies, it's amazing. I mean, first of all, empathy burnout happens after 10 to 12 patients in a family physician, and we see an average of 30 patients per day. And that means that after the first 10 patients, doctors are so emotionally overloaded, they can't even listen to what people are saying. They just tune people out and try to get out of the room as soon as fast, as soon as possible. You know what I'm
So
saying?
no empathy. They're just
Yeah.
working on numbers.
Yeah, and even like they did a study recently, they found that when you get a colonoscopy, if you get it before 11 a.m., that they're likely to find 20% more polyps before 11 a.m. After 11 a.m., the number goes down because of just fatigue in the physician. They can't.
So
They
I
can't even.
wonder what that does for surgery. I mean, imagine.
Isn't that wild? Yeah, and think of like even residents having to work 36 hours straight, and you know,
Yeah, I
so
always wonder
we're
about
really.
that.
We're not built to be doing this physically, spiritually, emotionally on any level. You know, human beings are not meant to work at that speed. So I wanted to do something to help my colleagues, you know? And so that's when I went back into the system, went back into what I call assembly
You
line
close your
medicine.
clinic?
I closed my clinic after a year. I moved to Washington State. My husband was also at the time looking for a job and couldn't find a job in town, so we moved to a different state. We thought we'd sort of see, because I'm always curious. I'm always thinking, well, maybe it's different somewhere else. You know, maybe
Right,
it's
right.
different in Washington. So we went to Seattle, and you know, and I had a number of jobs there, and then I came back to Eugene 2 years later. And to make a long story short, 6 jobs in 10 years, I didn't find anything that was different. It's all the same. You know, it's all the same. All the clinics, even smaller clinics, are trying to emulate the big clinics. They're all doing a bottom line productivity game. And
But you
so,
had the memory of having found something that worked.
yeah, I found
So
something
that
that
was in you.
worked. That was in, and I knew there was a way of doing it differently. And so then, actually, after my last employed job in 2004, when I left, I got very depressed because I didn't want to open my own clinic again. I didn't want to repeat what I had already done because I knew I could do it a way that would be better. But it still wouldn't satiate sort of the larger healthcare dilemma in this country and help my colleagues, you know, beyond my own patients. But then I had an epiphany. I actually, after 6 weeks of depression, because I was actually going to quit medicine altogether and go back to waitressing. Can you believe that?
Oh my goodness.
And this is very common. Other female doctors tell me this all the time, that they want to go back to their essentially minimum wage simple jobs because they're so exhausted and, you know, they can't take the stress any longer. Isn't that amazing after all that
Well, of
education?
course. Yeah, I mean, really, it's not all that amazing if you think about it. It's amazing that it doesn't happen more often, really.
Yeah.
And
And
I wonder
so
if it's that different for men and women physicians.
I think it's a little different for women in that it's harder for women because we're more relationship-based and emotional, you know, and we really value nurturing and human relationships. I mean, men value that too, but women happen to be very good at that. I mean, that's the difference between men and women. Men are more into like competitive, bigger is better, spatial, you know, relationships and building things and that sort of stuff, you know, generally speaking. And so I think men, it's easier for them to turn medicine into a game of numbers, you know, and who can win at the end of the day and get the trophy,
Yeah, and
you know?
also I guess, you know, there's also a financial aspect that takes place where you start living a lifestyle that doesn't really allow you to go back to waitressing.
Yeah, so I think like women are less willing to turn medicine into a competitive sport,
Yeah.
you know? And men actually designed medicine in this country because it was a male-dominated profession. You know, we only had one female doctor back in 1852 or whatever, and then, you know, turned like I think by 1911 there were 7,000. You know, but basically women have just recently gotten into the profession. We've just had equal numbers. I think in my medical school class it was 50% women. So but practicing physicians, I think males still dominate. So it's a very male-driven profession still. Yeah, a male
So,
model.
you knew you didn't want to go back to the garage, but you couldn't find anything that worked from somebody else's practice.
Yeah, because I wanted to be with, don't you always want to be with like-minded people at least part of your life?
Oh yes, of
You
course. I
know,
mean,
it's
I
nice to
teach. You know,
have.
I'm a writer and a life coach. I spend a lot of time alone, and I really miss. I would love to be in a community of like-minded people, but I'm pretty unemployable. I mean, you know, I've never worked for anyone ever in my life. It's always a bit of a choice that's not always easy to make.
Yeah, because we're social creatures. And
Yes.
it's just, I think, over the years, it becomes a strain if we don't have anyone that we can relate to, you know? You know, just knowing that somebody else is out there and believes the same way, it just gives you strength, you know?
Of course. And
So
sharing
I
the
just
moments
missed.
and
Yeah,
everything.
I missed having a colleague like my dad, let's say. You know, somebody
Yeah.
fun that I could work with.
Did you ever think that you could have a practice with your dad?
Well, he's a pathologist, and for a while I thought about going into forensic pathology, but can you and
Oh, yeah,
special
right, okay.
I worked with a woman who specialized in a child abuse and forensic pathology, and it's like, boy, that would really be depressing, doing autopsies on children from child abuse
Wow.
cases. I just thought, oh no, this is not me.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I really needed to be with like live people
Yes.
who could be rehabilitated in their current life.
Yeah, you want it
You
to
know?
heal.
Yeah. So,
So
yeah.
you were depressed 6 weeks, right?
And I didn't really get out of bed for 6 weeks, except to go to the
Really?
bathroom and walk my dog.
What did you think was happening?
Oh, I was going into a depression, and I went into a depression in medical school my first year around the dog lab situation too, because I used to cry a lot about that. Because even though I was exempted, I just was feeling like I have a lot of empathy. I guess I'm an empath or whatever. I was feeling the pain of all of the students in my class. I just felt this sort of emotional rape going on, you know, of my
Yeah,
classmates.
and getting a sense for who you are, you not doing
Yeah.
it was not enough
Yeah.
because everybody else was still doing it.
Yeah, and then I felt, you know, very isolated and lonely, and like also like nobody else cared. Sort of probably like maybe, I don't know, as if maybe I was. The only example I can think of is probably what it would feel like for somebody in, I don't know, Nazi Germany who's like trying to hide Jews, but all of their
Yep.
relatives are working as SS guards. I mean, it's just sort of hard to figure out what to do because you're having all these feelings, and yet the predominant culture you're in is so barbaric.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
what did you do? After
So
I mean, 6 weeks in bed.
6 weeks in bed, then I just amazingly I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning on Pearl Harbor Day, like with this vision that jolted me out of bed. I definitely feel like it was delivered from God or the spirit world or something, but I had this vision of how healthcare could be in this country, and it was delivered to me, and I saw all of a sudden, like patients and physicians holding hands, working together, building like a beautiful healthcare system, you know, from the ground up, you know, versus like what we're doing now, waiting for something to be delivered from the
Yes,
government down,
yes.
you know, which I don't think is the right approach. I mean, certainly government can incentivize right behavior, but I think having an empowered populace of people who are compassionate at the grassroots level, you
Yeah.
know, and action oriented is much more helpful than waiting for the government, you know. So I just had this beautiful vision. It was just like a collage of images that shot through my mind, and also I saw sort of the like a light at the end of the tunnel. I saw like a lot of really, it was happening in strange in slow motion, yet like really fast, these images coming. It was hard to describe. I mean, I just have the sensation that I saw the answer, you know, like I saw the promised land or whatever it is, you know, and then I felt just the visceral feeling of having experienced, you know, this beautiful vision, and I felt that I should be the one to start it. So I
And did you have
basically,
instructions on how to start it, or you just saw the
I
end
know,
result?
just these, it was vague, visceral feelings and images, and
Okay.
then I just got the idea, oh, well, what I should do is have like a community visioning, you know, a big meeting, and ask everyone to design their ideal medical practice, and I'll work for them. It was like a really beautiful, beautiful idea, you know?
Yes. So
Yeah.
that's what you did.
So that's what I did. I had like a town hall meeting, a series of meetings.
What did you call them?
I guess I didn't really call them anything. I just had the flyer up, and it was publicized in the paper in a little blurb. It was just an invitation, maybe, an open invitation for the public to come to an event, to a meeting, where they could create their ideal medical clinic, and tell me what they want, everything from how it would taste and smell and feel to walk into an ideal medical clinic in an optimal healthcare system. I just invited people essentially to dream with me and told them that I would bring their dreams to life, I guess.
Wow, how many people showed up?
Well, the first meeting had maybe 25, 30 people, and then I had a series of additional meetings because whenever anyone wanted me to come to their house or their community center, I would just go. And so the meetings were anywhere, I think the smallest one was 4 people and the largest was like 30. But I did a series of like 9 meetings from over a 6-week period, and then we were open 1 month later. I got 100 pages of written testimony. And I just began to see after talking to, that many people and having them share with me their beautiful ideas that there was really a common themes. And the most common thing that people really want is to be recognized as a human being and an individual and to be heard and listened to by somebody that's more like a friend who happens to have training as a physician but really relates to them as a friend. That's what people want.
Well, talk about a personal, I mean, it's a hugely personal experience to go see a doctor. So how did
Yeah,
you
because you know what? Doctors look at you in places that you haven't had anyone in your life look at you. You know
That's
what I'm
right.
saying? They
You might
touch you
not
in
even have
places,
looked at.
look inside of places in you that your spouse will never look in. You know what I'm saying? So you need to have a trusting, beautiful relationship with this other person. You know? Your life is in their hands.
Yes, and your intimacy, and then it's such a vulnerable space. So
Mm-hmm.
what, when you said we open a month later, what did that look like?
Well, what it looked like is that, well, people described this place as like a sanctuary, a safe place, a place of wisdom, somewhere that they could walk maybe from their home, just a neighborhood clinic. So I thought, oh, well, what I want to do, I just started riding my bike around my neighborhood looking for maybe a place that I could rent. They also, by the way, really wanted to have an integrated approach so that it would be somewhere where they could get acupuncture, massage, other services. And so I guess I didn't really know what I was looking for. I just thought maybe I could find somewhere within a mile or two of my home a place where I could be collegial with, massage therapists and counselors and others who were wanting the same sort of vision. And I happened to find a place called Tamarack Wellness Center, which was just a mile from my home in the woods of in a residential sort of wooded neighborhood, very beautiful, on 4.5 acres with a solar heated pool and hot tub. I mean, this beautiful wellness center. And so there's massage therapists and counselors and a nutritionist and an acupuncturist and, chiropractor. And I just rented a space there with all of these people. And it was beautiful. I've been there for 4.5 years. I've never kept a job more than a year and a half. So it's
So
kind of
you're still
amazing.
there. So then you were able to contact these people who had come to these forums and say, "Okay, I've done it."
And we're open. And it was very simple.
And what happened with insurance?
Oh, I still take insurance. I started, basically, I give everyone the benefit of the doubt, and I tried to take almost, I think, every insurance. And until, a few of them are really difficult to deal with, and they keep you on hold forever, very disrespectful. They deny all first claims. And so some of the insurance companies I had to stop associating with because I felt that they were disrespectful to me and certainly to my patients. But I try to stay. Continue to work with the insurance companies that I find are, respectful to people and, provide payment and actually treat their,
So here again, you
customers
made your
well.
choice. You found, you looked through the basket and you found what worked for you and what didn't.
So I
Who are
take
your
like
patients?
80%.
Who are
Who are
your
my
patients?
patients?
Are there a
Oh,
variety of people, education,
yeah.
income, political view, or?
Yeah. Well, I happen to live in a pretty progressive area, so I think a lot of my patients are a very progressive group of people. But then I also see who are overinsured. I do have a lot of people that have very good insurance and all of that. Then I see a section of people who are uninsured. Maybe 20% of my patients are uninsured, and a lot of them are very suspicious of allopathic medicine, and many of them haven't seen a doctor in like 10, 20, 30 years.
And
So,
allopathic medicine is what you practice.
Western medicine. And so they, because they feel they can trust me, they have decided to enter into a relationship with like a Western doctor for the first time in their life or for the first time in many decades. So I see a lot of really unusual, almost third world type cases, because they haven't been receiving medical care for 30 years. So I diagnose a lot of really unusual things that, you would maybe diagnose in a village in El Salvador because even though they're in the United States, they don't trust the medical care in the United States enough to go get services. And many of them don't have the money to do it. So I see like what I call the suspicious group of like alternative minded people. And then, I've diagnosed a lot of just unusual conditions. Like my very first patient had this extremely rare, this 25-year-old macrobiotic thin guy with this high blood pressure that was life-threatening to the point he could have had a stroke any minute. His blood pressure was like 220 over 120. And he had a very rare condition where his renal artery was closing down because of a muscular growth in there. But, the thing is,
So
it's
the
just
fear had
amazing.
kept that guy away from going to see a physician,
He
and
had seen a lot of
somehow
other
you were
physicians.
able to get him.
He had seen some other physicians, but he didn't trust any of them enough to follow through with anything they recommended. So he would just sort of brush the surface of getting medical care and then wander off and try his own thing. And luckily, I got to him in time before he
So how
had
many
any.
patients do you see a day, would you
I
say?
don't like to see more than 11 a day, as I mentioned before in that study. Patients, basically physicians, get fatigued after 10 patients. So I like, 8 is a good number for me because I spend a lot of time with them. I spend up to an hour with them. So, 8
And
patients is
one at a
definitely,
time.
and one at a time, yeah. But I have seen 11 in a day, and I don't think it's safe for me to see over 11. It's just too much.
And do
But,
you work
so it
5 days a
varies.
week?
I work 3 days a week, but I will work on the other days if people need me. So I've done house calls and off hours and middle of the night and that sort of thing. But as far as scheduled appointments in advance, I work on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, afternoons and evenings. And so, and then I do,
And
by
you're
the
able to
way.
financially sustain yourself.
Yeah.
You've really done it the way you wanted to do it.
Yeah, I can make as much money working part-time as I made full-time at my last employed job because I cut out the middleman and I'm basically the only, that's another thing that your listeners might not be aware of, but I have no staff. It's just me. I don't
You
have
have
a
no
nurse.
receptionist?
No, I don't have a receptionist or nurse or anyone. It's just me. It's like a
How does the
one-woman show.
appointment process work?
Well, people can email me, they can do it online, or they can call me, or a lot of times when I'm seeing somebody, I'll set their return appointment at the time that I'm seeing them. It really, because I only have this small number of patients that I see per day instead of like if I don't see 30 patients a day anymore. If I saw that many patients a day, I'd probably have to have another system, with some help. But
So
people
you're
can
telling
do
me
on.
that within 3 days, you're able to do the bookkeeping. What about the insurance billing?
It's actually very simple because you can go on online. There are these free clearing houses where you can submit your bills directly to insurance companies, and they suck them out of the system every hour. So the insurance company has my bills within, that evening that I at the
Boy,
same
that
evening
is
I see.
just hearing that just kind of turns on its head everything I've always heard about the complexity of taking insurance.
No, it is
So
not complex at all, and that's another reason. The two reasons why I'm doing this with no staff, the first one is that it just makes things a lot simpler, and the thing that I missed the most was the quality of my sacred relationships with my patients. And so if you hire staff, and I'm not against staff, I just don't personally in my office want to have any staff. I totally they think that if you're in another office, you want staff, have staff. But I, it's like having staff for me would be like inviting a CPA or a nurse or a secretary into bed with my husband at night. You know what I'm saying?
Huh.
I want to be alone with my husband. You know what I'm saying? I want to
have that
sacred time with my patients. I want, when they call for an appointment, I want to hear the shakiness in their voice, and I want to hear the mood that they're in so I can gauge what would be the best time to see them and how much time they need. You know, and I don't think anyone else can do that as well as I can because I know
But how
them.
Do you pick up the phone if you're with patients?
Oh, my business office is at my house.
Okay.
And my office where I see patients is at the wellness center. So when I'm there seeing patients, nobody can interrupt me unless I have an emergency and my cell phone goes off, but I rarely have that. But nobody can interrupt me during – so it's just amazing because think about it. When you come to see me, it's just you sitting in a nice little living room with me, no buzzing, beeping, interruptions, knocking at the door, totally different than other physician offices, you know, where the doctor can be pulled out any time or has to run around in circles or run to the next room for emergencies, you know, because it's one person at a time. Patients really love it because they have this sacred moment with me that they feel completely attended to and listened to. They don't even get that at home with their spouse.
That's right.
People are so busy now with iPhones, iPods, everything
That's
happening
right.
a million times a minute. You can have gadgets that do 14 things at once. Nobody has the luxury anymore of sitting alone in a room with somebody for up to an hour having complete emotional, spiritual, physical
yep.
attention.
Yep, that's what they get with me, and sometimes mm-hmm. I feel that, you know, they don't get it with their spouses as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, we only have a 15, oh, goodness, 10 minutes left. That went so fast. Tell me, I get a sense of your practice and the beauty of it, and anyone who wants to know more, I'm going to give you Pamela's website so you can go. But I know that a big part for you is to make sure that doesn't happen just for you. You're really committed to making sure there are more of those what you call ideal practices all over the country. So tell me more about that part.
Well, you can go to idealmedicalpractice.org, which is my website. There's a map on there under Create Your Own Clinic where there's instructions for any community that wants to create their own medical clinic. You don't have to be a doctor. You can follow those instructions. I will help.
What do you mean you don't have to be a doctor?
To start the process, you can just sit, like if tonight you were in the mood, you could just get together with your, you know, five or six neighbors in your neighborhood, have a little dinner at your house and discuss what would be like, you know, close your eyes and vision, what would be the ideal healthcare model for Anacortes, you know, what would you like to see, what would you like to dream together, and as soon as you write it down and start visioning it, then it becomes that much closer to coming true. You see what I'm saying? People are
yeah.
afraid to dream right now. They're so cynical. People think their dreams can't come true. But that is, you know, just the wrong way to think because the first step in a dream coming true is having the courage to dream it.
Oh, for
and
sure.
And if you dream it with other people, it's that much stronger. You can have your own individual dream. See, I could have had this beautiful clinic like I had the first time in the garage that I thought was so wonderful, but that was still me holding my patients hostage to my beautiful dream. I didn't want to hold patients hostage to my beautiful dream. I want to live their dream. See, it's very different when you ask
it's
people
very
to
different.
Dream with you, you know? And another thing I have to say that I didn't finish answering earlier, there are two reasons why I have no staff. So one is it just makes it very simple and I can have these sacred relationships. Also lowers the cost because I don't have to pay salaries of all these other people. And the third, the real reason that I'm doing it is I am like a puzzle solver and I want to understand what's wrong with healthcare today. In order to understand it, I want to do every job. I want to be the janitor. I want to be the biller. I want to be the secretary. I want to be the nurse. I want to be the doctor.
Wow.
And so because I'm doing every job, I can see where the problems are, why it's not working in a longitudinal sense. See what
yeah.
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I'm just not in my little cubicle doing my little part of the routine. I'm in everyone's cubicle watching everyone because I
yeah,
am.
Yeah, so it's
everyone.
Holistic healthcare for the healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically healing the healthcare system. I want to heal the healthcare system, so I want to do every job.
Yep, I get it. So
Yeah.
on your page, on your website, there is a page called Create Your Own Clinic.
And if you
And
click on that, there's actually a map on the very top that says, find a
seven
clinic near
steps to
you.
successful
Yeah.
community clinic.
And there's a map they can click on if they want to see if there's another doctor in their area who's already doing this. And that's just on the very top. It says, "Find an ideal clinic near you." If they click on that, they can see like 500 different clinics, 400, 500, several hundred around the country that are similar to mine. As far as their doctors trying to recreate that old-fashioned, feel-good neighborhood model of healthcare,
Okay.
and then
Then there are
if they want to
seven
create the,
models.
yeah. And then there's seven, yeah, there's all different models they can look at on here if they have an interest in different innovative models, because this is just something that I came up with my community, but there are so many doctors around the country who want to find an answer to healthcare, and they have created beautiful models in their own neighborhoods, which serve them. And so it's kind of fun, actually,
Yeah, I can see the
to
creativity behind it. After the seven models on her website, you guys can see it says pick one, create a hybrid, design your own, the above models are templates. So, a playful approach to that. But so what I'm hearing, tell me if I'm correct here, because I know that you're so used to it, you don't even blink when you say billing insurance isn't complicated, and all I've ever heard is that it was a nightmare. So really fresh, press the reset button. This is what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that you have a full practice, that you schedule 3 days a week, and that you will go and do more if needed, but your basic model is 3 days a week, not more than 11 patients a day. You spend a full hour with your patients one-on-one. There's no phone ringing. There's
If they
no.
need an hour, I mean, some people with strep throat only need 15 minutes, but
Okay.
in general, 30 to 60 minutes. But physicals are like an hour. Even for 5-year-olds, I spend an hour with them for their physical. It's
Oh
really
yeah,
cute.
if we have time, I'd love for you to tell the story about that little girl that was in the sun, but I don't know if we'll have time. And if we don't, you guys can go look up the article online. But so you spend as much time as needed with your patients. There's no staff. It's just you and them. You do take insurance. You find the process of billing insurance to be almost automated and seamless. It doesn't give you a headache. And so your patients receive really one-on-one, super focused, allopathic, but at the same time holistic healthcare. Because you don't, like you say, you don't change mufflers. You just look at the whole person. And your life personally, you don't have the burnout. Your life works. And on top of this, you have done enough research and continue to do enough research that you can tell other doctors, hey, you guys can do it too. This works. I make enough money, I have enough time, and my patients are happy and well. So this is win-win-win-win-win. Like you win, the patients wins, and the other doctors, if they want to do the same, have the ability to benefit from your research. And on a large scale, the whole world wins, because if more of those pop up all over the place, what a blessing. Did I get it?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, man. Man, 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 man. So we're talking about a doctor who's not burnt out, who's excited and creative. And when we were talking on the phone the other day, you were telling me how you get bored easily, so you're always looking for new ways. I think you were telling me you have a balloon machine in your office now.
Yeah, I was going to get, I haven't filled up the tank yet, but I have a helium tank. I mean, I give balloons to people. I've done house calls where I go visit people and make them food and bring them. I started singing songs with my patients. I mean, I pretty much do whatever they want. If they want to hear a joke, some people say start every visit with a joke, and I share. I do things that are considered like illegal with my patients. I mean, illegal, not that you could get arrested,
I think I
but
do too
like.
in my practice.
Yeah, I mean, because of professional distance, you're not supposed to share stories from your own life with your patients, because that is breaking through this like barrier that you're supposed to stay on your side,
Yeah,
right?
that's
And
supposed to
don't.
make everybody so much happier and create nothing but separation. Yeah, I mean, I tell my clients things, big boo-boos that I've done, and because the more human we are, the more we can connect on a human level and heal.
Right.
And that's what we do. We heal.
Yeah. And so it's just, it's incredible. It's definitely
what
a win-win
situation. Privilege
to
talk with you. So let me ask you this. If I know a friend of mine is a physician who's feeling pretty darn burned out these days. I had some questions that I weaved into to our hour together, but he might be interested in connecting with you, or someone else on the air might be. Are you willing to get emails from people?
Yes, I actually try to call people when they contact me and talk to everyone, in, you know, like on the phone, because I think that this is what we're sorely lacking in the world is human connection. And I feel if somebody's reaching out to me through an email that I might as well call them back if they give me their phone number, because I think that an email, you know, a lot of times you take things out of context. I can't really explain all of this in an email.
Right.
And I want to be able to answer people's questions and really help other physicians, because every physician, when I save one physician's career, and I've saved so many physicians from dropping out, then think of all the patients that I'm saving. You know what I'm saying? Every doctor has maybe up to 1,000, some have 2,000 patients. To save one doctor's career is helping like 2,000 people potentially.
Yeah, yep. So. Hey, tell me, are your parents still alive?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Are they happy with what you're doing?
Yeah, I think they're really intrigued by it. And my dad really loves it. You know, he loves the fact that I'm doing all this writing and really, you know, I mean, I'm basically healing our wounded healers, you know, trying to help my colleagues. It's a beautiful mission, you know. It really is.
It really is. Gosh, what an inspiration you are. And you give me also, which I didn't expect, permission to practice the way that I practice, which sometimes people tell me, did you really just hug your client? And I said, yeah, and I just made him cookies too. It just feels so right. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I just had a patient appreciation pool party for my patients, a holiday party where I rented the pool at Tamarack Wellness Center, and it's a solar-heated indoor pool, and I had candles all around the pool and catered food, and I invited all of my patients. I think 65 of them came, and so now I'm swimming in my bathing suit with all of my patients in the pool and giving them holiday food. You know, and it's like, yeah, that's so much, feels so much nicer than just going to a holiday party with the staff of another clinic.
Pamela,
you know, you've
thank
worked
you
in
so place. Much, so much,
You're
so
welcome.
Much. I wish we weren't out of time, but we are. I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, because this hit on many levels for me, and I think other people as well. So thank you so much. We're out of time, so I'm just going to squeeze in next week's episode really quick. You guys, my website is still, it's up. You can see it, but I can't access it because my hard drive crashed, and I have been making cookies and playing with my kids, so I haven't gotten to it, and that's the way it is. But I will get to it. So next week's show is not on there. It's with a lady called Ronnie, and we're going to talk about kind of a twist on weight loss, not the kind of weight loss that's usually looked at, more of a healthy weight loss. And I don't know that much about it, but I'm intrigued enough that I've asked her to come in. So have a great week, everyone. Have a great New Year's. Pamela, thank you so much.
Thank you. And please keep in touch, and I'll definitely keep in touch with you.
I will, and if you ever come by Anacortes, please come see me.
Okay.
I would love that. So much.
Thank you.
So thank you, everyone. Have a super great week, and I'll talk with you soon. Bye-bye.